Dave Fanning on 2FM.
And now, let's see, it took over 30 years, but there's a film playing in Irish cinemas at the moment that finally is made and is out there, and it really is out there, I can tell you. It's loosely based on the novel Don Quixote. The movie is called The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. Johnny Depp, Ewan McGregor, Robert Duvall, John Hurt, they were all involved, or supposed to be involved, at stages over the past three decades, but many, many problems, from major flooding on the set to all sorts of financial difficulties, meant that the movie was unlikely to get made. Ever, that is. Well, writer and director Terry Gilliam never gave up, and with Adam Driver and Jonathan Pryce in the lead roles, it's finished and it's up there on the big screen for all to see and of course all to judge. Terry Gilliam is a former member of the comedy troupe Monty Python's Flying Circus, and over the years he's directed 13 films including Time Bandits, Brazil, Fisher King, 12 Monkeys and Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Well, I spoke to him on Thursday last, a day before the death was announced of his former fellow Python, the other Terry, Terry Jones that is, whose death, as they say, was announced on Friday. But I'm going to start here with a scene from the film itself. It's a bit of art imitating life, really. Adam Driver is Toby, who comes back to make the film he never finished a decade before. There you go. And he comes across Jonathan Pryce, who isn't playing Don Quixote, but believes he genuinely is the real, the one and only Don Quixote, who has come to, if you like, restore the lost age, not of chivalry, but of chivalry.
Look, do you remember years ago, about 10 years ago, I was making a film? You were just an old man I found.
I was lost. Forgotten.
Yeah, right. But then I found you, and I thought, this guy has an interesting face. It's the kind of face I'd use now to sell insurance.
I owe you a great debt, Sancho. You're a restorer to me.
You really don't remember? Don Quixote de la Mancha, the Knight of the Mournful Countenance,
come to restore the lost age of chivalry
by a special will of heaven.
Terry, in any way at all, do you think this is a movie less about Adam Driver's character, Toby? It's a film about you. I mean, against all the odds, 30 years of setbacks, and there it is finally on the big screen.
Indeed, yes. I suppose when you play with something that long and it begins to start either infecting you or affecting you or just changing you in one way or another, it... Because, I mean, the story of Quixote is really about failure, about a man who misperceives what the world really is. He looks at the world in a more noble way, having read a lot of books on chivalry, and then goes out to try to live a life that allows that view of the world to survive. And, of course, it doesn't. Reality is there with people who don't have the same beliefs. So he's always knocked down, and yet he always gets up. That's what I like about him. He's a very Sisyphean character, and he rolls the ball up to the top of the mountain, and the ball rolls down, and he's got to push it up again.
Yeah, but I mean, like, underneath every single thing there, the fantasy, the reality, the madness, the sanity, there is optimism.
Yep. I guess that's what you get being born in America.
That's what you get being born in America.
You get there, and unlike the English who lost an empire overnight almost, they've learned more about living with self-deprecation and finding irony in existence.
Do you know, funny, when I say, is it like less a film about him than it is about you or about the central character, in the first half hour, do you think it might be a film about the ethics of directing movies, about imposing your will on others for the sake of art? Whoops, wait, maybe that's you as well.
Yeah, I know. Well, this is a very schizophrenic film. Yeah. and so am I. I mean, that was the thing when in our final iteration of the script was the idea of what films do to people, not just who watch them, but in particular people who are involved in the making of them. And it really was about my kind of sense of guilt of what we did to a little village in Scotland called Doon when Python made Holy Grail, because we all came up from London and we went in there, and it's a weird kind of Viking-ish kind of life there. You're just having a wonderful time, but the locals are getting caught up in the belief that they can be part of this wonderful world, which then at the end of the film goes back to London.
Yeah.
And marriages broke up, all sorts of sad things happen because people believed that they could join the circus, basically.
Well, then the vision that you had 30 years ago, I mean, has the journey changed the end result for you? In other words, would it have looked, felt and been very different 30 years ago?
Yeah, I think so. That's been the advantage of 30 years, because I've always felt the film is making itself, and the film is more patient than I am and waits till we get it right. And originally it was very much like the story of Mark Twain's Connecticut Yankee King Arthur's Court. Man gets bonked on the head, ends up in the Middle Ages. Now, that's what it was when Johnny Depp was playing the lead and Jean Rochefort was playing Quixote. And that's just not as interesting as a man who is responsible for what's happened to the people that were involved in his little film. These villagers, you know, a girl thinking she can be a movie star heads off to the big city and it doesn't work out well for her. Yeah. Quixote goes mad. This little cobbler given a chance to play the mighty Don Quixote eventually went mad. And now our main character, Adam Driver, is trapped with both the guilt and the sense of responsibility for what he's created.
I mean, like, you know, the myth that therefore inspires the movie, it's in line with the changes of mood and behaviour. So, like, the movie is in sync with the myth and the story, and that's pretty obviously what people are supposed to take from it, for starters.
I think what pleased me the most, the best reviews I got on this film, one was in Spain and one was in France, and they were from each country. I met the leading translator of Cervantes, and they had both translated Don Quixote. And both of these people came forward and said, this film is wonderful. You've really captured the spirit of what Cervantes was trying to say. And I thought, that's the best review I could hope for.
Well, hold on a second, because I just read a review 10 minutes ago as well, which I thought was pretty good too. This guy, I have to say, he said it's a fascinating mess and he loved the movie. It's very important. This guy loved the movie, but he called it a fascinating mess. Is that okay?
Well, this word mess
well, you know,
seemed to started back in Cannes in 2000, 2 years ago, because the reviews from Hollywood said the film's a total mess and they didn't like it at all. And the word mess stays in there. It's not a mess. It's just the people, the structure we're using and the way I think is not the way they think. I find children can watch this movie and find it makes total sense to them, where an adult seems to be trapped in constructs that they've developed over the year of what the world is and how movies function. So there is, that's why the second important thing is that most people who see it once and are lucky enough to see it a second time say it's much better the second time.
Yeah.
They suddenly recognize what we were doing.
Well, I want to get back to the movie in a second or two, the man who killed Don Quixote. But just before I do, one or two other questions I want to ask. Like, a simple thing rather than 30 years. You go in for a little less conversation, which is the Elvis Presley song. You give it to the World Cup 2002. You've got Ronaldinho. You've got Ronaldo, Thierry Henry inside a huge tanker. It's a job that starts and ends. Is that a nice thing to do? Just like, it just doesn't take that long necessarily.
This is one of the moments. This is where I'm a little bit like Adam Driver, because at the start of the film, I think he's quite fed up with the world he's living in, doing commercials, making a lot of money. I did this commercial. It was 10 days shooting, and I hated 9 of those days. And I got paid more money for doing that commercial than for making Don Quixote, the film.
I can imagine. Yeah, exactly. Well, then what about the Damnation of Faust or Benvenuto Cellini, like doing operas and doing stuff like that, like directing those and being very successful at it? That's such a different discipline. And it's a lot different than Monty Python, a lot different than Don Quixote. I'm just thinking, like, that must have been great.
It was just interesting. Somebody, the head of the English National Opera, a man named John Barry, caught me at a moment of vulnerability.
I'd say there's been a few of those in the last 30 years.
Exactly. And he said, come and do this. And the Damnation of Faust by Berlioz was never actually originally written as an opera. It was 8 symphonic pieces that Berlioz and his script writer managed to cobble together into a narrative. And I liked the idea of taking on an opera that has never really been successful. Then I couldn't be compared to all the great versions of that opera. And because of what it was, it allowed me to play with the narrative, because so many things are so well structured. And I made this sort of quantum leap. I think I'm going to place it in Germany in the first half of the 20th century and see what happens.
Because, like, also J.K. Rowling wanted you for Harry Potter. Chris Columbus got the job. Alfonso Cuarón did one later. You liked Alfonso Cuarón's work. You didn't like Chris Columbus's. Did you hate the fact that they didn't want you?
No, I didn't expect them to give me the job. I just got a free first class ticket out to L.A., which I spent my time in L.A. basically hustling money for Quixote at that point. And the meeting with the studio, I just, it took, you know, a couple minutes sitting down. You realize, no, they don't want me. They're doing this just to show that they're listening to J.K. Rowling, take in her concerns. And it was a pain. The problem is flying out there. On the plane, I read the script, and I said, I can do this. I know how to do this. She's obviously seen Time Bandits. She's obviously a Python fan. I know how to do this stuff.
Right, exactly. That's the point. Well, listen, before a last question on Don Quixote, just one more I want to say. When you did Time Bandits Brazil and then Adventures of Baron Munchausen, and that's a kind of a, I don't know, a trilogy of imagination about the ages of man or whatever, child, 30s and elderly, etc. And then Fisher King and 12 Monkeys and Fear and Loathing, that's sort of a trilogy about 90s Americana. Did you know when you did Fisher King first there was going to be three? Did you know when you did Time Bandits first there was going to be three? It really was a trilogy, or did it happen to go like that?
No, I didn't. And in fact, I always used to say that the Time Bandits Munchausen trilogy was actually, Munchausen was the fourth part of my trilogy, I would say. And people were just blank-faced at me. But right. I don't plan these things. I don't really plan my life. That's why I've never had a career. I just do things. And I fall into things at the right time sometimes, and other times I don't. It's what excites me at the moment that propels me forward, I suppose.
Well, one of the things that helped propel me forward in this current movie is that Stellan Skarsgård says after about 90 minutes, try to keep up with the plot. And I might have been sort of going a little bit to the left, but I did. I kept up with the plot and loved it all right up to the very end. But when you lost the plot, when you lost literally the screenplay, lost the rights to it, did you ever think, right, this is it, that's enough, I've had enough of this, like obviously I'm never going to make this movie, the gods don't want me to make it, so I won't.
You sound like all the people that were around me.
Well, no, did you ever think, I'll bye-bye to this damn thing, I'll just make other movies?
No, I literally would plow forward, I would meet another producer who convinced me that they would be the one to make it, and then very shortly I would realize this person is more of a fantasist than I am, and after a couple of years you realize it's not going to happen, so I would actually go off and do other things, but it would never leave me. Whenever I finished one film, there would be Quixote waiting and demanding I spend time with him again. So I've lost a friend now that I've finished the film.
And might you be working in the future doing a Gorillaz movie with Damon Albarn? There's talk about that.
That was a couple of years ago, and there was talk, yeah. And we spent a bit of time talking, but nothing really came of it. So I don't know. I've lost touch with him, as a matter of fact.
Okay, well, you are alive, Terry Gilliam, at the moment as we speak. And there was a thing in Variety, the box office movie Bible, about 5 years ago. A lot of people don't get the chance to do this. I love it. Okay, they thought you were dead. They thought you died. So they actually wrote and printed an obituary. So that was in October 15. Did you read it? Was it any good?
Yeah, the whole thing was quite ridiculous. I mean, somebody pointed, you've just been killed by Variety, Terry. And it said, Terry Gilliam, Monty Python director, dies at XXX. And I said, what? I died in a Vin Diesel movie? What's going on here? But the worst thing is, there was the obituary. There was the whole, my life laid out. And it irritated me because it was almost as bad as Variety's reviews of my film. They spent their time talking about my failures and not the few things I succeeded at doing. But what I don't know, what I did do is I got my lawyer and I said, you know, we got to do something. And he didn't want to do anything. And I said, all right. In the end, I wrote a letter to the editor of Variety and explained the story, how it caused a lot of distress in my family. In fact, my son went to work the next day, not knowing anything about this. In his
not knowing bullshit. You were dead.
Not knowing I was dead, exactly, and he hadn't seen me, but he didn't know whether I was alive or dead. I was Schrodinger's cat in the box, and it's when you look, do you know whether it's alive or dead? And his boss came in. I'm so sorry, Harry, about your father, and he didn't know what he was talking about, and then the boss explained, and Harry, my son, had to call my wife to say, is dad dead? Yeah, so anyway, I wrote this letter to the editor of Variety saying, you've caused a lot of distress, psychological damage to my family. What would be nice to ease the pain, could you just send me a case of Chateau Margaux wine?
And they did.
And, and they sent me two cases.
Ah, that's lovely.
I call it my redemption. I mean, my resurrection wine is what it is. I save it for special occasions.
Absolutely. Well, listen, it's been a real pleasure, Terry. Thank you so much indeed for talking to us. And the very best of luck with whatever you do next, because you find, by the way, the journey to this movie, I should say, really, you know, the journey was everything, was it? Are you now going, what am I going to do next?
I don't have a clue. I'm lost right now. I'm waiting. I'm sort of panicking, but at the same time, trying to keep calm, knowing something will come to me.
Terry, thank you very much for talking to us. Good luck. Take it easy.
Thank you.
Bye. Terry Gilliam, as I say, I did that the other day. I said Thursday and Friday. It was on Tuesday, and then it was Terry Jones, his mate from Monty Python's Flying Circus, died on Wednesday. And Terry Gilliam, the movie, I also said that it's in cinema. It is. I think it might be somewhere, but sort of all over the country. It gets released next weekend. The Man Who Killed Don Quixote is what it's called. And we mentioned there, do you remember that ad he did back in 2002 for the World Cup with Ronaldinho and Ronaldo and Thierry Henry and all the rest of it in the big tanker of the ship and kicking footballs and all the rest. And it was the accompaniment of this, which then became a hit.